my calculations are correct, when this baby hits 88 miles per hour, you're gonna see some serious shit.
Do you really think you have a chance against us, Mr. Cowboy?
Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker.
It's showtime.
Right, welcome everybody to another episode of the VHS Strikes Back. I am one of your hosts, Chris Phelps, and my co-host and very good friend is Mr. Dave Horrocks.
Hi, Chris, and hello to our listeners out there. Welcome to the VHS Strikes Back, the show where we dust off the old video player and go on a nostalgic journey to look at the good and the bad movies of yesteryear. Now, Chris, it is again another Patreon pick this week. You know, we like to get them in there when we have a new Patreon. What are we going to review?
Well, Dave, we are going back to 1991, and I've been looking forward to this one. This has been on our list, and we've mentioned it over a few episodes over the last couple of years. But it stars Patrick Swayze and Keanu Reeves, and it's Point Break, the surf movie that ripped off Fast and Furious. So what about yourself, Dave? Have you seen this before?
Yes, well, first of all, thanks to our producer for today, so Lucky Lulu Green, who chose this one. And listening back to last week's episode, Chris, kind of gave you a bit of enjoyment there. I was listening back to it edited, like, whoa. Yeah, so I remember this one. I'd have watched it about 92. So when it came out on video, mainly, I think I've said it in the past, my mum was a big Patrick Swayze fan. She's a big Stallone fan as well. Big, you know, all of them with the muscles and stuff. We were always going to watch those movies. So I just remember really enjoying this one. And it was a little bit different from other movies that I'd seen at the time. You know, I guess we had Lethal Weapon out, didn't we? You know, that's kind of a buddy cop. If you class, you know, Gary Busey as being the buddy, I don't know if that's really true, but it kind of had that feel, didn't it? And it's one of those I'd watched a few times, but I think it just lives long in the memory. You know, there's so many iconic scenes and moments. And even, you know, going on Twitter now, you don't have to scroll that far before you see, like, Keanu Reeves with the big thumbs up, you know, and the smile at the beginning. So many gifable moments. And it has been a few years since I've watched this one, but I've really been looking forward to going back and watching it and seeing is it really as good as I remember it being. And I'll keep my cards close to my chest, Chris, but all I'll say is, what about yourself?
I'm pretty similar, I think, Dave. I wouldn't have seen it at the cinema. It was a VHS rental. I think I probably saw it at maybe about 93, 94, but it was always one that you used to see the VHS cover. And because I always say the dynamic of me renting movies, I had to sort of convince my granddad that this was the film for me, him and me nana to watch. You know, they never were. They were just films for me, as you know, with my martial arts nonsense and that. But yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed it. Obviously, Gary Busey, Mr. Joshua and Lethal Weapon. This is 4 years after that, after Gary Busey had his accident on the bike as well, which he'd end up with slight brain damage as well. So he made a bit of a comeback. But you know me, I love Swayze, Dave. As a Patrick Swayze lookalike, I had to rent this one. Didn't know much about Keanu Reeves. Had he done Bill and Ted by this time? I think he had. And I was never a fan of Bill and Ted, if I'm being honest. I've watched the first two. Didn't hook me in, but I remember Keanu Reeves' stock was rising, so we had this. Then we had, you know, the old, there is a bomb on the bus, you know, the old 50 mile an hour speed nonsense.
Was it Arnie?
Yeah, that was a bit bad. Hang on, let me get it right. Let me get you right. I won't be able to do it now. Yeah, it did sound like Arnie that day. I think Arnie was cast as
all the time in the world.
Fuck you. It's going to sound the same. It's got to be that, you know, totally bodacious. Like, fuck you. That's what he speaks to him. There's a bomb on the bus. No, that is even worse, Dave. Just fucking scrap it. That is terrible. That's it. Dennis Hopper. But he stock had rose slightly around this time. So, I mean, he's even more famous now, which is ridiculous. 30 years later, he's even more of a megastar with John Wick and that. But yeah, I fully enjoyed it. And there was something you said to me months ago when we did Fast and Furious, and I was absolutely disgusted with you. I was like, fuck off, Dave. I'm going to leave the podcast. Fast and Furious, the first one, is my favourite of the lot. I know Mike's just gone through it, and he from Genuine Chit Chat and Mike Burton, and he's like, I don't like the first one. We were having a talk about doing a watch along podcast series, weren't we? In that, so him and Megan, and maybe me and you,
or we need more podcasts.
Yeah, obviously, Dave. Yeah, because we do. But no, it's an idea, Dave. As you take a germ, you know, germ of an idea that I'll regret about three movies in, thinking, oh my god, what we've done. But no, so you didn't really like. But I loved the first one, and you come out with an absolutely blasphemous statement that Fast and Furious is just Point Break with cars. And I remember thinking, that is sacrilege. But I am a man of my word. I'm a man of integrity. If I am wrong, I will stand up and say, you know what, Dave, I'm wrong. And if I can't work my way out of it, I'll still say I'm wrong. So you, my friend, are absolutely correct. Watching this movie and reading stuff online, which I did read when we did Fast and Furious, but I didn't go too in-depth because of my blinkers for Paul Walker and Vin Diesel. I'm not having it. Oh my fucking God, is this movie? Well, no, it's a sacrilege for this movie. Fast and Furious is the biggest rip-off I have ever seen, Dave. I'm shocked. I still love it. I'll always love that movie, but everything, the beat for beat stuff in this film is the Fast and Furious. It's the guy who made Fast and Furious, or the lady who made Fast and Furious, they've not even fucking tried to hide it. All they've done is replace the cars from surfboards. It is a joke how much Point Break is. Fast and Furious is ripped off from Point Break. What an absolute disgrace, I've got to say.
Yeah, I mean, it's because when I made that comment, it had been years since I'd seen Point Break, but it just felt Point Break. But going back and watching the original Point Break again, yeah, it's ridiculous, isn't it? And you sort of think, yeah, how the hell did they get away with it?
Honestly, Dave, it is. You know, I couldn't believe it, because the beats for the film are exactly the same. Bodie, who's played by Patrick Swayze, he's got to get his trust, his group turn on him. They then have a bit of a scrap. He saves him. Like what Paul Walker does with where he saves Vin Diesel from getting arrested. Even though the police go, Toretto, stay there. And he runs off, and the police don't come to his house then to arrest him, Dave. He just runs off, and there's no recompense for that. But yeah, I couldn't believe it. Even with the girl, I know it's not his sister and that, but the whole thing, honestly, it blew my mind watching it. I'm sat there with my hands over my head going, I don't fucking believe it. And I'm going to have to eat humble pie and apologise to you, Dave. So I'm here apologising to you, my good friend.
Well, no, it's just, I was going to say I won't take it, but these come rarely, don't they? So I will take it.
Take it what it is, Dave.
Now, Chris, should we get into our trailer?
Let's go.
You still haven't figured out what riding waves is all about, have you?
It's a state of mind. It's that place where you lose yourself and you find yourself. You don't know it yet, but you got it. It's right there.
It's not tragic to die doing what you love.
Little Hand says it's time to rock and roll.
Everybody freeze!
Somebody move!
Keep your hands up and your eyes down!
We are the ex-presidents!
FBI! Freeze!
Special Agent John Utah, day number one in L.A. Welcome aboard.
You want to nail the bank robbers and be a big hero?
Definitely.
That's Bodhi. They call him the Bodhisattva.
You want the ultimate, you gotta be willing to pay the ultimate price.
Sure trust tomorrow. Next day outside latest.
Everything moves in cycles. So twice a century, the ocean lets us know just how small we really are.
It's the ultimate rush. There's nothing that comes close to it. Not even sex.
Johnny has his own demons. Don't you, Johnny?
The ex-presidents are surfers.
Feel what the wave is doing. Then accept its energy, get in sync, and then charge with it.
To have produced exactly squat, during which time the ex-presidents have robbed two more banks.
I can't describe what I'm feeling.
This was never about money for us. It was about us against the system.
Go! God, give me a fucking break. I am gone.
When you shoot, you don't miss.
Don't fire! After you, Alphonse!
Fear causes hesitation. Hesitation will cause your worst fears to come true.
No!
Are you getting too goddamn close to this surfing guru buddy of yours?
Adios, amigo!
first tube this morning.
Now, former Ohio State quarterback and rookie FBI agent Johnny Utah assists experienced agent Angelo Pappas, played by Gary Busey, in investigating a string of bank robberies by the ex-presidents, a gang of robbers who were rubber masks of Ronald Reagan, Richard Nixon, Lyndon B. Johnson, and Jimmy Carter. Rather than robbing the vault, they only demand cash from the tellers that they have in their drawers. Matron. And and are gone in 90 seconds, Chris. Now, what do you make to the opening of this movie? Sorry for the whole carry-on thing there, but it's slightly double entendres.
All we need, Dave, is about three Toyota cars or Nissans, whatever he drives at the start of it. A load of fucking shit DVD, fucking TV combos, and we've got exactly the same beat-for-beat thing. There's going to be a lot of comparisons with this. Look, this movie, to be fair, is I do enjoy it, and I think the idea behind it's great. It's almost like, you know, even to a point, I'd say this is taking some beats from Beverly Hills Cop 2. One of my favourite films is, you know, the Alphabet Bandit is that Maxwell Dent. You've got Bridget Nielsen, 6 foot blonde, you know, woman. Nobody can recognise her at all, Dave. She's a joke. She's, you know, you know it's her. All she wears is a load of shades in each raid. But this seems a bit like that. So they're not going for the big stuff. They're just going for the stuff that keeps them ticking along. And I think the raid thing's good. Look, it's no shit, no surrender free, Dave. Nothing can beat that bank scene. That is the best bank scene we've ever seen in any movie. And I'm bringing back No Retreat in this one. I'm sorry. I've tried to avoid saying it, but you can't beat Casey doing the business with his fucking staff thing and his sword.
With his James Bond sword crutch thing. Oh, shooting sword thing.
Yeah, take the woman. But anyway, but no, it starts off really well. I think where it does dip, though, there's a rabbit in this one, Dave. I'll tell you, there's a really bad
rabbit
in this. I don't know what's going on, Dave.
A rabbit hole, maybe.
I think it could be the rabbit hole. There's an elephant in the room. I know it's a rabbit in the room. Dave, I think the impression of Keanu has just knocked me off today. But
drunk again.
Yeah. 6 days ago, I'm still drunk. But no, his acting, Keanu Reeves' acting is fucking woeful. You messaged me, didn't you, and said, like, his acting's... Look, I always say about Keanu Reeves, love him in The Matrix, fantastic, and, you know, one of my favourite characters, Neo, and that, but give him more than three sentences, like Arnie, where he's got to express and show emotion, you're fucked. You're absolutely fucked. Just give him one-line bits of dialogue, and that's all you need out of him. He'll answer someone, and that's it, because he's not a great actor. And at the start, this is proper B-movie acting. It's really bad.
I'm not even sure it's B-movie, to be honest. So I remember hearing, I mean, years and years ago, like in the 90s, about what a wooden actor Keanu Reeves was. And I was thinking, I don't see it. I mean, it's fine. I like yourself, you know, I'd seen him initially in Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. I enjoyed him there, but He was more the sidekick in that movie, I felt. You know, he was just there to, like, go totally bodacious, dude. Basically a ninja turtle, wasn't he? And then, you know, he was in this, and initially I'm thinking, well, at the time when I watched it, I'm thinking, well, yeah, he's not really an action star. I don't get it. You know, he's all right, he's got shorter hair. Gotta say, though, Chris, he's a good-looking specimen, isn't he, back here?
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah, definitely. It gives Swayze a run for his money, Dave. Definitely.
He does, doesn't he? And he's got a great shape to him as well. You know, so he's not massive. He's not like, you know, Sly Stallone or anything like that muscles. But he's just... He just looks after himself, doesn't he? And, but honestly, for the first third of this movie in particular, I just found the acting just horrendous. Everything was just really bad. You know, when he's talking to the girl about when he's undercover, you know, and he's in the coffee shop talking to the girl, trying to convince her to teach him to surf. And he's talking about, you know, he woke up and he realized his His parents were dead and he woke up and he realised all of, you know, what he'd achieved. They were all their dreams and not his. I just felt it was so wooden. And got to tell you, Chris, there is a Point Break Live, like a show. And what they do is they pull someone up from the audience and they basically get them to play Johnny Utah and get them there and then to read off cue cards. I think that's fantastic because that's almost like what he's doing in the movie for a lot of it. It's just, it is really bad. But what I'd say is, you know, it only jars this bad acting because we're going back to 91, you know, when it came out. So obviously, we watched it a little bit later. But he's definitely got better over the years than this. You know, if you watch, like you say, he doesn't say much, say, in John Wick, and it's more about the action, isn't it? But I'd say even in The Matrix, he's better than this. I just found it, the acting was really jarring, I agree.
Yeah, I think what's interesting is he's not putting on that, like, Bill and Ted accent. He's trying to be a little bit more straight-laced. He's 25-year-old, you know, he's this rookie, but he's got all these stats. The fact that he's a quarterback. And what is weird is he meets Tyler, who's played by Laurie Petty, who, unfortunately, has a research, and he was in Tank Girl, Dave, so that says it all. But she's there.
She was Tank Girl, wasn't she?
Oh, she's Tank Girl. Was she actually Tank Girl? Oh, right, okay. Well, there you go then, Dave. I fucking hate that movie, as you know. So, anyway, Tony Farina, I still won't forgive you, my friend. But, you're right. Sorry, I should have got that. It's Tank Girl. So she's there as the love interest. He meets her in a shop and literally just forces her to take him surfing. I mean, Gary Busey's playing... He's sort of linked between the bureau and he's a bit of an idiot and he's got like Hawaiian shirts on, a bit of a bumbling idiot. But his Gary Busey
or
well, the both,
Angelo,
yeah,
Angelo Pappas.
Well, him as well, Angelo. Yeah, no, but he's quite up and down. Gary Busey's character Angelo, because one minute he's a fool, the next minute he's a fucking marksman, Dave.
Yeah,
somebody's shooting, he pulls out the bag, he's proper at lethal weapon, but. He goes surfing with her and nothing really happens, but she's like, you're dangerous or something. And I'm just like, he's just lay on his front paddling, done a little bit of paddling. The stock footage of Bodie, it's supposed to be Swayze, is the worst body double we've ever seen. He's got blonde hair, well, dyed blonde hair like Swayze's got, Dave. Absolutely nonsense. He looks nothing. And I'm still surprised that Swayze did this after Roadhouse. This is really bizarre. I always thought this was before.
No. I mean, I can't remember. I don't think I'd have to look, but I don't know if I've seen Swayze in anything after this. I think this was about one of the last things I've seen him in.
And that, Ghost? That,
oh, fucking hell, Ghost, yeah. Oh, we're going to have to do that, aren't we?
It's a great film.
At some point.
That.
Yeah. It's a bit soppy, like, but, you know, we'll have to do it. But the haircut. Or I'm assuming it's a wig. It's a proper, it's like a blonde Rita Fairclough haircut, isn't it? And, yeah.
That's a good one, that.
It is funny because, you know, so they come up with this idea. We've seen the presidents, the ex-presidents, they've robbed the bank. We've seen them in action. And... You know, Angelo, he's a bit of a joke in the precinct, isn't he? You know, everyone else is taking the piss out of him. You've got those two douchebag FBI agents who are ribbing him all the time. Like I say, think Angelo's a joke. You get the classic trope, Chris. You get the angry captain, you know. And so Busey, so Angelo, he's got this theory that they're surfers, you know, and based on the fact that when one shows their arse, they've got a real proper tan line, you know, so they've got white cheeks and a brown back. And also...
Say a brown arse, then, Dave. Yeah.
Well, it was a black and white photo, I guess. And then, he's got some traces of sex wax. which you use for waxing your surfboard. Now, I'm pretty sure that that you've got specialist wax for surfboards, but they've obviously put that in for a little bit of a gag. So that's how they end up with coming up with this plan that, you know, Johnny Utah is going to go undercover. Now, I'd have thought, Chris, in the police, if you were going to go undercover, it's quite a well-orchestrated thing. You don't just get FBI agents like, you know what, I think I'll go undercover. it seemed a bit daft to me. But I agree, it's like, he obviously, Johnny Utah, so he goes out, takes his shitty surfboard that he's just bought. And was that Eric Furlong in that scene?
Oh, I don't know.
Who's, you know, Eric, he sold Furlong? Him the surfboard. I couldn't figure it out, I should have looked it up. But it just looked a bit like him to me. But yeah, he's going out surfing. But like you said, Laurie Petty's tearing strips off him. It's like, what are you doing? I don't know if he's got like the surfboard equivalent, you know, that's got like training wheels on it or something. But yeah, she absolutely tears strips off him just for practicing surfing, doesn't she? So yeah, that seemed a bit of an over-the-top reaction to me.
Yeah, he did, to be honest. And I think as well, like watching Busey sort of bumbling back up, and everything goes wrong, doesn't it? So he does a bit of surfing, and it's supposed to be painting the picture of like this adrenaline there, and he's really excited to be part of this thing, a la Fast and Furious. And it's so bad that this was 10 years before, but I can't help but compare the two because I saw Fast and Furious so many times. But it just annoys me all the way through watching this now, because it's such a good film, and I'm like, oh, I'm so disappointed. But I think when he meets Swayze, and Bodie's there and he comes over and all that, and them guys, one of the guys has chinned him, aren't they? They've cut the, as he was surfing, he's like, this is my wave. How the guy does that mid-wave is unbelievable. Like, he can do that, but, you know, he punches fucking Johnny, gets a bit of a bloody nose, he ends up on the beach and they sort of have a pop at him, but then he sort of make it out that, oh, he's all right. He's in, Bodie knows that he's this quarterback who blew his knee out and all that.
I think, so before that, they meet and so, you know, Bodie's a bit wary of who this Johnny Utah is. You can see that he's got a history with Tyler. And they end up playing football on the beach, don't they?
Yeah.
Now, Chris, this is the same beach where they filmed the football scene in Karate Kid.
Was it?
Yeah, yeah. So I thought that was an interesting little tidbit. I don't know, must just be good for filming or something, good for access for the cameras and crew and stuff. I don't know, but I thought that was quite interesting. But again, the fact that he's an ex-quarterback, you know, he does all right, doesn't he, in the football. But then you get this weird thing where, you know, it's like us playing football or soccer, isn't it, Chris? And you know, you mark out the pitch, you put your jumpers down for the goalposts and whatever, but you know what the pitch is. It seemed like Bodie was running off and they were miles away from the pitch.
He ran about 100 yards.
He's still legging it. Johnny Utah's chasing him down. And like just tackles him into the sea. And it was just, I think if it was like not, I think if it was in the vicinity of the pitch, you know, I think it wouldn't have been so laughable. But it just seemed to go on for ages where everyone's like, we're over here. You know? But brilliant. Of course, you know, everyone wants to kick his ass then, don't they? But, you know, Bodie had already figured him out. He already knows that he's this ex-college quarterback who, you know, had this promising career, but unfortunately, you know, couldn't go pro because he'd done his knee. So this all happens. So he knows, or he thinks he knows who he is. Or he kind of does. I mean, nowadays, Chris, you just probably have a look on Google, you know, what's this guy up to now? Oh, he's an FBI agent. But it's after that that we get, you know, Anthony Kiedis and his crew there, and they're going to fuck up Johnny Utah just for the hell of it. And then we get a little fight scene, don't we? And, you know, Bodie kind of comes to the rescue and they beat up this other surf gang.
Yeah, who all live a surf can look like they've definitely been taking the vitamins, Dave.
Oh, my
without
word,
a doubt.
They have. Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely. Isn't the front guy the one the baddies out of Cyborg?
Oh, what's his name? It's been years since I've seen that.
It might not be him, but I thought that was the guy with his bloody name. Someone will be listening to this going mad, Chris, you idiot. But I thought that was him. But yeah, they're all big, like, steadheads, aren't they? Yeah, I can't help but making the comparison to Johnny Tran in Fast and Furious, because same thing, they pinpoint the wrong gang and not realising that right in front of them is Bodie and his team. So I think, and the president thing again, because there's a scene earlier, and it's quite good with this one. I will say that about halfway through, Bodie realises who Johnny Utah is, because they go on a raid and they almost foil him. But he's got the mask on, doesn't he? And we have this proper chasing through all the houses and everything and all that. And he's got the mask on, but he looks at him and it's as if Johnny realises who they are. And then it all unfolds. So they're sort of playing a bit of chess. But I mentioned this loads of times. I mentioned it when we did Roadhouse. But the bit I was looking forward to, and it still doesn't disappoint, is the fact that Patrick Swayze did his own stunts in the back when he was in the parachuting. That is brilliant.
Again, he's a specimen, isn't he? You've just got to have admiration for him. And apparently, you know, the producers didn't want him to do the skydiving. So they were trying to get him to stop. And, like, he kept sneaking off to do his skydiving. He was a bit of a nut. I think officially he did something like 50, I wrote it down here, 55 jumps in total as part of the movie. So official jumps. But like I say, he kept sort of sneaking off as well. I tell you what, Chris, I got to highlight this bit, because this is before he finds out Johnny Utah is this FBI agent. I don't know why, it just really tickled me. When they're chilling out on the beach, having some discussion and stuff, they're talking about this 50-year storm. And Johnny Utah goes, 50-year storm? What's that? I don't know why. I just, in my mind, I'm picturing David Mitchell from Peep Show just going, well, it's a storm that comes every 50 years. I don't know why. It's just a ridiculous bit of exposition. You could have called it something a bit more mysterious. But obviously that would pay off much, you know, in the final scene of the film. But yeah, I thought it was good. I tell you what, Chris, it was about an hour in where, you know, that Angelo and Johnny Utah are staking out the bank, aren't they? So they know they're going to hit this bank, and, you know, fucking Angelo is just pissing about with his, waiting for his meatball sandwiches, and doesn't notice that, you know, they've driven up and started robbing the bank. So it's when they go on that chase, obviously, Johnny Utah's given away who he is. And I looked at the timer, it's like an hour in. I'm like, I thought it was much later in the film where he figured this out. So yeah, I was just surprised it was about the halfway point in the film where he's blown his cover. And again, I just think, you know, I don't know why, I was just struggling to buy into the fact that, you know, he's gone undercover, but, you know, he's happily walking around the, I don't know where it is, where the FBI have a building, but, you know, he's walking around the beach, you know, with a suit on as well. He's got a suit on and a surfboard, yeah. You know, at times. And when he's... You say about the language and stuff. When he's in the police precinct or whatever, in front of the angry captain, and he's got his surfboard there, and apparently he can't leave it in the car because it sticks out or something like that. There was some excuse for him to take the surfboard in. And he's talking about getting with women. And then John Utah's like, babes. That's what you call them, sir. Babes. Again, I just thought, that is a ridiculous line. But there's something so endearing about this, Chris.
Yeah.
The acting from Reeves is terrible. The machismo, the homoeroticism, everything about it, it's fucking brilliantly, I want to say 80s, but, you know, this is 91, I know, but it just feels 80s, and this is all, you know, around that time. This is the sort of movie that is, you know, I look back at so fondly.
Yeah, you know what, I'm with you. It's very similar to some of the stuff we've done recently where it shouldn't be good because he is so bad. But the film's just, it's just the action DNA, Dave. You know, it is the buddy cop type thing. There is that dynamic with Bodie. He is a bad guy. What's interesting is Vin Diesel's character doesn't really kill anyone as such in the first few films and that. And it's only later where we sort of get it. But in this, Swayze, give a fuck, does he? He proper takes people out at the end. But I do think...
Only at the end. I mean, so when that bank job goes wrong, so they end up, don't they? They found out who Johnny Utah is.
Yeah.
The gang just want to, you know, skedaddle. They want to get out of there because the cover's blown. But you can see Bodie, he's parading himself like he's this Buddhist monk or something. But he's just a thrill seeker, isn't he?
Yeah.
And when, you know, so he needs to push the boundaries a bit more. So, you know, he goes and he gets Johnny Utah. There's this weird standoff where Johnny Utah's pretty sure that it's him, and he knows who, you know, he knows his cover is blown, but they're going to go out for this skydive. And then you get this whole awkward scene, you know, about with the swapping of the parachutes. So Johnny Utah is just thinking, oh, they're going to off me here. They're going to, you know, my chute's not going to open or something like that. And then he just, in that moment, he kind of forgets everything, I think, when he's skydiving. And you just get that joy, you know, that he's got from the surfing and all these kind of things that he's done while he's been undercover. But then obviously it goes a bit south where, you know, they've kidnapped Tyler. They're going to kill her unless Bodie gets there. But when they go into the bank job, they never go into the vault. And, you know, I just, watching it back now, I was thinking, what is his motivation? Suddenly, they've never done that. They're in and out in 90 seconds. That's why they've been successful. According to Bodie, you know, it's just sticking it to the man. It's you know, disrupting the system. But there's no reason for him to go into the vault other than to just, you know, push that thrill a little bit more. And then he ends up getting, you know, getting people killed, getting some of his gang killed. You get the guy who I was convinced was River Phoenix for a while, but, you know, he just looks a bit like him. He gets killed, he gets shot right through the neck. I think Bodie and Johnny Utah get shot, but they've got bulletproof vests on. And then that's where he sort of takes out the cop, isn't it? You know, when things have really gone south, that's when he gets rid of his Buddhist monk persona and starts killing people random. Well, not randomly, but, you know, he's not too shy about it.
No, he's not. And he's a crack shot as well, Dave. Surfer turned crack shot. And yeah. Didn't you say to me, by the way, just going back slightly, there's a mention of Nazi surfers, Dave.
Surfer Nazis. Yeah. So when Johnny Utah and Bodie get into that fight with the other surf gang, then they're walking off after the fight, and it's there, like, Johnny Utah is just asking, who are they? And he says, oh, you know, they're just Nazis. And if you look, when the FBI storm the house where they've got, like, a fucking arsenal in there, and Anthony Kiedis shoots his foot, which I always remember that bit. He's got the old fucking Union Jack boxer shorts on. I don't know if you noticed. You can see there's, in the background, there is some, like, Nazi memorabilia. So I thought, are surf Nazis actually a thing? I'd have thought, you know, they were all a bit groovy and just wanting to chill out and stuff. But, yeah. Surf Nazis Must Die was 87, wasn't it, when we looked at that?
Yeah, yeah. What a film that is.
You just needed the, what was it? I want to say Big Mama, but whatever a character's
oh,
name.
Oh, the mum.
Just needed her. The mum, yeah.
The retired geriatric who rode a Harley Davidson. Yeah, the her Dave, who was an assassin. Fucking yeah. Ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous, that. But no, I think watching it, it's endearing. It's got that proper 90s feel about it, 80s, late 80s, 90s. It's just my sort of film. It's ridiculous. Nothing makes sense. And I always question these gangs in these movies, like, what do you think by surfing all day? Nobody sort of thinks, well, does he work? Do they work? They just literally bum around. So it's pretty obvious that it must be them because they haven't got jobs. It's so bizarre because they're like free spirits. Like you, when we did Surf Nazis, a completely ridiculous film, but you've got this guy who's got like kids, teenagers, you've got loads of people around him. And it's like, where's your money coming from? You're all eating and drinking and driving cars and that. So it never, ever makes sense in these films. Like I say, I've said to you before about Warriors, absolutely nonsense film that is. It's just these gangs of people around New York chasing this other gang. But I always set back as like, I think as I've got older going, but what was the game plan? What did you do in life? Did you just stand there? Because one of the gangs wears a baseball outfit. I think I mentioned it at the time when we did Surf Nazis, and they've got the face paint on and everything, and they walk around with baseball bats, and I'm like, but nobody questions it. Like we did Blade on Comics in Motion, the Blade Trinity, yeah. And Blade's just walking down the street with Ryan Reynolds and Jessica Biel, and they've dressed completely differently with shotguns and fucking katana knives on them, but nobody questions them. Nobody says, oh shit, what are these doing? It's just taken as it is. So yeah, it's very strange, but I do think the execution of the movie is good as well. And it got positive reviews, so it is a good movie, definitely. And look, Dave, you can't beat a bit of Swayze. He's still the man. He's classic Swayze in this.
Yeah. It didn't make that much at the box office, you know. So it cost $24 million. I reckon about half of those were the skydiving
fraternity
scenes and what have you, but it made $83.5 million at the box office. So, you know, it was successful. But, you know, I guess it's become more of a cult movie than a massive financial success, hasn't it? And I think the fact that Fast and Furious has just beat for beat ripped it off. I wonder if that's maybe made it a bit less of a cult classic now. Because, you know, if you want to see this story, the Fast and Furious franchise is bloody huge now, isn't it?
Oh, massive.
So maybe people would go back to watch this. But I do love, you know, there is so much. Like, the second half of the film is mostly about Johnny Utah and Bodie, isn't it? And you do get that moment where, you know, kind of, Bodie's escaping, you know, he's got his little jet plane there. They're going to head across to Mexico. Seen that plenty of times, haven't we, Chris, when we've reviewed these movies? That's the trope. And you get Gary Busey's character there, Angelo. And he gets shot in the back, doesn't he? And then when Johnny Utah runs across to him to check on him, he's taken a shotgun to the back, and Johnny Utah just rolls him onto his back. It's just like, he'd be like, I'm fucking arsehole. Why would you? Someone's just, he's got blood all over his back and stuff. I know he's probably gone through, I would imagine, but I found that a bit ridiculous. But I point out these little nitpicks. It's still motoring on. And this kind of cat and mouse thing you get with Bodie and Johnny Utah, I just feel like is great at the end. And I will just call out a sec, Chris. So this was directed by Catherine Bigelow. So she's the ex-wife of James Cameron. But for a female director in the early 90s to, you know, have this blockbuster movie, you know, and this all-star cast, I think is pretty good. Of all the movies we've done, these machismo movies in particular, you know, you don't get that many female directors.
No, you don't. You don't, Dave. And at the time, 30 years ago exactly, it would have been unheard of, wouldn't it? So she was a bit of a trailblazer, really.
Yeah, it seems so. But, I mean, one of the highlights, Chris, is we get the 50-year storm, don't we, in Australia, which I tell you what, Chris, we do some bad accents on this podcast and across our many other podcasts as well. But fucking hell, I'm not having that any of that lot are actually Australian. It's a bloody storm, it is. It was terrible. It was clearly filmed somewhere in the US and pretending to be in Australia.
Oh, it's bad, isn't it? And obviously, you know, he lets him go, Dave. Oh, my God, I can't believe Fast and Furious just ripped this off. The same thing, Paul Walker owed him a 10-second, well, not Paul Walker's character, but Brian owed Dominic Toretto a 10-second car and lets him get away when he should be arresting him. Same thing again. Froze it, you know what I mean? Like, froze it all away. And they're, like, going mad at, aren't they, at Keanu Reeves? He's had this fight with Bodie, and he's like, you've let him go. I've not let him go. And he goes up that wave, and you're like, oh, right, yeah. Okay, yeah. But he still left it open for a possible sequel. At least we haven't got Point Break on Mars like we've got with Fast and Furious, Dave. We might have had a whole franchise of fucking Point Break movies. As much as I love them and they're ridiculous, they make no sense. So at least they left it a one-off movie, to be fair.
The thing that I found a little bit... Well, there's a lot of the movie that's unbelievable, isn't it? But the fact that you got so many people... Right? I mean, I'm not being funny, Chris. These guys are, you know, the ex-presidents. They've robbed a few banks. And they haven't gone into the vaults. You know, they've taken the money out of the, you know, the tellers. What is it? The tellers?
Yep.
You know, where they, you know, just in the front. So they haven't got away with that much. And I find that the fact that, you know, so Johnny Utah, he's got the long hair, hasn't he? And he talks to Bodie about how he's always been about a week behind him or something. You know, he's almost caught up with him, but he's never quite done it. So this has obviously gone on for some time. How much of the FBI and, you know, whoever these people are backing him up in Australia, I don't know if it's the Australian government, maybe it's the Australian police. How much money is it taken to take him down?
Yeah, ridiculous.
It is ridiculous, isn't it? And again, I'll draw a Fast and Furious comparison where they're nicking DVD players. It's just the amount of money they're spending on this is just ridiculous. But I do love this scene. I do love the fact that, you know, I mean, Bodie basically kicks Johnny Utah's ass, doesn't he?
Yeah.
He's at the point of drowning him. And then he stops himself. But, you know, in the struggle, he's obviously got him handcuffed. And you get this little speech, you know, he won't be able to survive in a cage. And that's where he lets him go. But the fact, you've got like tens of policemen all there. He's just casually like, oh, I'm going to let him go. And then he throws his badge away, doesn't he? When Bodie goes off, so he's obviously done with the FBI. But surely, Chris, that is an arrestable offence as well.
Yeah, he's aided and abetted. He just fucking gets rid of him, doesn't he?
I've just had enough. Dave,
you're right.
No, you just aided and abetted that guy. You told us to wait here, so we didn't go and just arrest him. And now you let him go.
Exactly. And I think that's what makes him better is, what is the motives of Johnny? Because he's obviously spent, like you said, he spent months doing all this fucking research, trying to catch him. When he gets the chance, he lets him go. You're like, right, okay. Well, that was it's a weird ending. I think it's supposed to be like the kindred spirits, aren't they, and all this. And there is a connection there when they did the skydiving. But it's a little bit thin. And also, it leaves it open. Oh, that's a terrible word. It left it open for a possible sequel. So,
well, I think we're supposed to believe that Bodie's just died.
Yeah,
you can't surf that. And I've got to say, Chris, that was a phenomenal shot, wasn't it? Because I don't know how they did that, because those waves look like 50 bloody foot in the air. Like nowadays, you'd think, oh, they've CGI'd that somehow. But fuck knows how they've caught that.
No, clever. It'd be a bit of trickery somewhere, but it looked massive, didn't it? So, yeah.
And I tell you what, Chris, around about, I'm sure it's maybe a little bit before this. Do you ever play California Games?
Oh, Dave, I was the master at the skateboarding on that. I used to love that. I've still got it. Yeah, I've got it on my Mega Drive emulators.
Oh,
I can't
nice.
Beat California Games.
I used to love the surfing.
Yes.
And so
yes.
you used to have to go up at a particular angle, and you had to come down at the same, like the opposite angle or the adjacent angle or whatever.
Yeah.
Oh, I used to love it.
Yeah, because I played it about 6 months ago. Because so you've got to use the D-pad, left and right, get some speed up. So you're going up and down on the surfboard, but just not enough to hit the floor. And it's so, the correction on it is horrendous. And you're right, you've got to get so far up, and then you can do a proper 360 loop-de-loop just as long as you're that far in front of the waves. But the waves are unforgiving. But yeah, what a game. The only one that was the load of shit on that game was that fucking sack one where you used to do football with them fucking beanbag things. Oh, my God.
Yeah, I didn't like that either.
Awful.
That was rubbish. I tell you what, I'm going off piste a little bit here. I've been looking, you might know this because I've heard you in the past talk about Raspberry Pi, but there's this Super Console X Pro that I've been looking at. It's about 100 quid. You've got 250 gigabytes, wouldn't get much on there. And apparently you've got like 50,000 retro games on it. Have you heard of one of those?
It'll be a retro Pi. They call it a Raspberry Pi when you make it into... So it'll be a Raspberry Pi made into a retro... You could probably do it yourself, but for 100 quid, it's not bad. The Retro Pi, I'm getting confused. The Raspberry Pi is what it's called. It's a CPU. It's basically a mini computer. And you can add, it's got Wi-Fi built in. It's got capabilities to put wireless controllers on. They're about £30. So you could do it yourself. All you need is an SD card. I got a 3D print of a PlayStation 1. I can see it now. It's right next to me. But that you could do it. But for 100 quid, it's not bad, because usually they charge a lot more than that. And they'll put them in a fancy case. They'll get a 3D box made or something, so it looks completely different. And you can plug, I can plug USB controllers into it as well as use wireless and all that. So yeah, the clever bit of kit.
But without my little computer pirating gaming club at the leisure centre, where would I get 50,000 games from for this, you know, bit of hardware?
Not legally, Dave. I don't think.
Now I won't press you anymore, because of course we wouldn't know anything about that.
Of course, that's allegedly what I'd seen online, David. Yes, as a games collector, that would be the last thing I would do. But no.
So for convenience and even just the time to upload this stuff, I think the entry level, she's got about 128 gig. It was about 60-ish quid or something.
Yeah.
So, you know, you can get them cheaper, but I figure, you know, you want a bit more space. And see, for me, the modern games, Chris, you know, fucking right old man radio right here. I just end up gravitating to FIFA, because if I sit down, I want to be able, after 20 minutes, to just say, right, that's it. And with the retro games, I feel like I can do that. Whereas, like, if I start playing fucking Arkham Asylum or something like that, I'm like, oh, fuck, where am I now?
Yeah.
I can't remember where I am in this map. So, for me, I think the retro games is something I just want to get into. And it looks like you just USB it into the TV and you're away.
Yeah, USB, HDMI, Dave. It looked good on the TV as well. So but anyway, Dave, sorry about that. A bit of a segue, wasn't it?
Right.
Shall we get into our review score?
Let's go.
So I'll go first on this, Dave. I think it's a great movie. I'm so pleased we went back, and Lucky Lulu Green picked this, so thank you to her for picking this for us. We've had it on the radar. We've talked about it a few times, especially when we did Roadhouse a few months ago. It's just a good movie. Like I said, Keanu Reeves is terrible, but he's not a great actor anyway. Even in John Wick, he's not the best. He's just a bit more silent and speaks like this, but it's a good film. It's a proper action movie. Swayze's on form. I think Gary Busey's pretty good in it. And I think if you think about it too much, you'd be like, why am I watching this? But just take it for what it is. It's a pure testosterone-fueled 80s, 90s movie. It's brilliant. So I'm going to put it right in the middle, Dave. I don't think it's absolutely amazing. And I'm not going to be saying I'm going to watch it every year, because I won't. But if it's on TV at some point again, I will watch it. So I'm going to send it to Hill Valley. And I'd recommend it. It's a good movie.
Well, Chris, got to tell you, we are not on the same page with this one, because I love this movie. For all its faults, like I say, the terrible acting, you know, some of the leaps of faith with the plot, some of the stilted dialogue, you know, an exposition that you get. I forgive all of that for just pure popcorn action nonsense for, you know, something around the 80s and 90s. I just thought this was fantastic and almost faultless, you know, because if it didn't have the bad acting and bad dialogue and stuff, it would take away from some of the charm of this movie. I've absolutely loved going back and watching this one, and this is back in my rotation. It absolutely lived up to the memory that I had of how good this movie was. I'd forgotten about the chronology, and like I say, it was a surprise that Johnny Utah's cover was blown about halfway through the movie. I thought it come much later than that. Chris, this is going to Cloud City for me. I've just loved it. And it's one of those where I've got to the end of it and I think, yeah, I could probably go back and watch that again, like right away, if it wasn't for time.
Yeah.
So, yeah, absolutely loved it, Chris. And thanks to Lucky Lulu Green for picking this one. It has been one of those that's reoccurring. We've gone back and said, oh, yeah, we need to do that one. Glad we've done it now. And, yeah. Chris, it has been so refreshing. We've had two for two really good movies now, and it's better than just having that shit that you throw at me each week.
Well, Dave, it is my pick, actually. So before I tell you what we're going to do, Dave, as my pick, it's big thank you to our Patreons today. So if you do want to support us, guys, patreon.com/the VHS Strikes Back. Thanks to Tony Farina, Brent from the Cinema Chat Podcast, John Hammond, Blake, Math, we've got Jax, we've got not Daniel Herbert, Dave, it's Herbs, I think, or Herb, yeah, you know, Herb. So yeah. Big thanks to him. So thank you for that. Lucky Lulu Green, who picked today's episode, the great Kent Gustafson. And we have a new Patreon, Dave. We have a good friend of Herbs, and that's Dylan Beecroft. So he might be called B.E. or Crofty, but tell us which one it is, Dylan. So big thanks. And I think he may be another truck driver like Herbie. So hopefully, listening to us, mate, it gets through the day. And obviously, we've got Ken and Dylan's movies to come up in the next few months. So that'd be really, really good.
Yeah, yeah. I just need to clarify with Ken which one he wanted. He was asking, you know, about Planes, Trains and Automobiles. Obviously, we've done that one. Great, great movie. I think that was a Cloud City for us both as well, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Spoiler alert. But yeah, one of my favourite John Hughes movies. He's thrown out another one, but I'm not sure if it was a gag.
I've seen that as well. Don't say it on there, Dave, please, until we ask him.
This would be a little bit different from what we've normally done, so hopefully he'll clarify that one. But Chris, I think we have delayed long enough, because you'll see from the calendar, I haven't actually put a movie, I've just put Chris's pick, and so I can tell you're trying to delay and think, shit, what am I going to
pick? Oh, no, I've got it. I've got it, Dave.
Have you got it?
I may have only started thinking about it when we were talking today and put my calendar on going, what are we doing for the trailer? And I'm looking at my collection and I'm like, but I'm not going to go with that, Dave. I'm going to go with a movie that I loved when I was a kid. Me and my brothers, Adam and Nathan, we watched this series of movies over and over again. And I think it was mentioned when we're going to do at least one of the movies. So we're going back, Dave, and I tell you, he was a legend for me in the 80s, Mr. Steve Guttenberg, Dave, and Carrie Mahoney was one of my favourites. So we are going back to watch Police Academy.
Nice. Actually, I just say, so Point Break, it's on Amazon Prime, certainly in the UK. I know some of it changes about, doesn't it, what you get in the UK and what you see in the US and whatever. And Police Academy at the minute, it's on Netflix, isn't it? So,
yeah.
You know, quite easy for people if you subscribe to those things to watch.
But but the VHS Strikes Back curse means that as soon as I've thrown it out into the world that we do Police Academy, them bastards on Netflix are going to take it off in the next week, because every time we do a film that's accessible for people, it goes off whatever streaming service it's on. So please get over there, guys, quick.
yeah. So I'm pretty sure that Police Academy only showed up fairly recently, though. So I think we're probably safe on Netflix for a little bit of time.
Brilliant.
But Chris, whereas Point Break has aged in my opinion, like a fine wine. You know, you have to appreciate it. If I was to, you know, my kids were, well, if I showed it to my eldest, say, she'd be like, Dad, what the fuck's this? But for me, taking it for what it is, it's aged really well. Police Academy, gotta tell you, when I think back to that, I think it's going to age like Carry On.
Yeah, I do, Dave, especially the Blue Oyster Bar. But anyway, shall we get into the trailer?
Let's go.
Crime. The city was full of it.
Hey! Three TVs!
Desperate measures were needed.
I want you to go to the Police Academy.
Police Academy is such a dangerous place.
Honey, don't worry.
Desperate measures were taken.
I'm joining the police force!
The mayor says we have to take this riffraff.
I'm trapped here?
Well, yes. We all are.
What about guns? When do we get guns?
You will be schooled in firearms, police procedures, local laws, and many, many other things.
Speed driving and self-defense.
I need a volunteer.
That's me.
I love it.
Police Academy.
Where did you get this gun?
My mom gave it to me.
Mister, I am warning you, Hightower.
They're lean. Mean.
Does the radio bother you?
Five.
I can turn it down.
Obscene. Each and every one of them striving to defend.
You make me sick.
Thank you, sir. I make everybody sick.
I see the thighs.
Or offend.
Come on. I haven't got all day the thighs.
And now that they're ready for the real world.
Give me the thing!
Is no longer a number one problem. They are.
Can you get my kitty cat out of the tree?
No problem, ma'am.
Police Academy.
So if you want to contact us, guys, at VHS Strikes Back on social media, if you want to email us, the vhsstrikesback@gmail.com. And if you get a chance, drop us a review on your podcast catching app. And it helps me and Dave get up there on them charts and, you know, gets more exposure to the show. So big thanks today, Dave, and big thanks to Lucky Lulu Green. Great, great episode. I really enjoyed it. So what are you going to take us out with, Dave?
Well, just give you a quote from old Bodie there, because that, again, another iconic line, and it kind of foreshadows what happens at the end. And he simply says, if you want the ultimate, you've got to be willing to pay the ultimate price. It's not tragic to die doing what you love. See you next week, Chris.
Bye.
That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over. What the fuck are we going to do now?
What are we going to do?
Maybe we could build a fire, sing a couple of songs, huh? Why don't we try that?
We better get back, because it'll be dark soon, and they mostly come at night. Mostly.
I'll be back.
That's odd.
We came, we saw, we kicked its ass.
Wax on, wax off.
One ring to go.
All right. Ding, ding.
Bust you up.
Go for it.
Well, here we go.
Ain't so bad. Ain't so bad. Ain't so bad. Come on. Ain't so bad. Ain't enough. Come on.
You must be crazy or something.
I'm crazy.
You're just a stupid
fool. Yeah, maybe
you're
stupid.
You're
ain't breathing heavy.
He's a fool. He's stupid.
I've seen you in 6 months.
I must break.